Yes, welcome inside the show. It is the Power Talk of Muncie, the new WMUN Game 1 of the Eastern Conference Finals tonight for the Indiana Pacers. Yeah, it's a big one. It absolutely is, but I'll tell you this coming up that obviously, you know, this is a weird conversation to have. It is, because you would think that Game 1 is kind of the set-the-tone sort of scenario, but the Pacers have lost both of the Game 1s in their previous two series. They were down 0-2 heading to Game 3 in the previous series, and they won both. So I'm going to tell you exactly how you should look at tonight's basketball game and look at it from the standpoint of what it means for the rest of the series and the urgency moments in this series for Indiana. Very interesting, because I can honestly say, again, for, you know, I don't know if the Knicks had a lot of pressure on them, but they were the expected team to advance to this point, and they did not. The Pacers have been underdogs from series number one all the way through this to this Eastern Conference Finals. And by the way, they are wildly the underdog in this series. Nobody's paying attention to Indiana. Nobody's really giving them a chance. And really, all the pressure's on Boston, and that actually does factor in this series. So we'll dive in to that topic coming up here in a matter of moments. George Brimmer from the Herald Bulletin's going to stop by. 4:25 is when he joins us. George usually joins us to talk a lot of Colts-related items. That being said, he is also covering the Fever on mostly a daily basis. And so, you know, I think the WNBA is very interesting, okay, because there are a lot of things that people and really players in the league were complaining about, all the attention Caitlin Clark is giving the WNBA and how she's going to change the league and all those different things. And there's a lot of jealousy from some of the players in the league. But, I mean, revenue-wise, and the fact, I mean, this is a conversation which is wild. They're now, WNBA teams are now getting chartered flights. There is, you know, there were reports after the game at the Barclays Center in game number one that they, like, absolutely doubled their revenue from previous season openers. Like, it's time to give Caitlin Clark her due as far as what she's doing for the league and what she's doing for other teams other than the Indiana Fever, and that's the stuff that goes unnoticed. So we'll dive into the specifics with George Brimmer from the Herald Bulletin. Now, the Fever have yet to win a game, and yet one of the biggest tickets in town to get is an Indiana Fever ticket to watch Caitlin Clark play. We knew this. We knew that her presence was going to be a major, major deal. So we'll dive into that and also talk a little Colts as well. It's awfully quiet on that front. It's amazing if you think about it. For the last 3.5-4 years, we've been talking Colts at this time. We've been talking Indy 500 at this time. Speaking of the Indianapolis 500, Rinus VK will join us on the program tomorrow at 4:30. Looking forward to that conversation a little bit later in the week. Your calls welcome, 765-287-1340 at Mark WMUN on Twitter as well. I'm going to make a statement that sounds ludicrous, but it absolutely applies in this series. Game one doesn't matter. Now, okay, that sounds like a radio host throwing out a hot take to try to reel you in like we're going fishing here, folks. But I got to tell you, game one doesn't matter. Because if the Pacers win this game, It stamps their, hey, here to stay. But I think Boston, you know, has more pressure at home than they might have on the road, which is wild, because in the other series, I think it's been such a home court advantage for Milwaukee, such a home court advantage for New York. But I feel like Boston has this little feel when they are at the Garden that their fan base is almost judging them to the point of holding their feet to the fire, saying, if you don't get this done, you will go down in history as one of the absolute flops. Like, Boston may play freer on the road because they are not in front of their own judging crowd. I know that sounds ridiculous, but it's true. And so I think this team, Boston, is way more equipped to win games on the road than the Pacers faced in the first two series with the Knicks and the Bucks. I truly believe that. And so, game one tonight is a great opportunity for Indiana. It absolutely is. There is no doubt about it. The intense amount of pressure is on the Boston Celtics. I think the Pacers are plus 2,500 in the betting markets to advance in this series, which is kind of funny because nobody's really watched this team this year. Nobody really knows that, hey, the Pacers beat Boston twice, including in the in-season tournament, which we didn't know how much that was really a factor until we got to the postseason, when now the Pacers beat the Milwaukee Bucks in six games after beating him in the play-in tournament. They beat the New York Knicks, who were the number two seed in the Eastern Conference playoffs, and now they see the number one seed in a dominant team in the Boston Celtics. I truly believe that game one, in a lot of ways, does not matter. It's a series-setting sort of deal, and if Boston wins by 8 points tonight, okay, shrug your shoulders. If they win by double figures, okay, shrug your shoulders. You know, maybe for any other team, if Boston came into this game and blew out the Indiana Pacers by 20, you'd sit there and say, oh my gosh, the Pacers are in for a long series. Guess what? Okay, guess what? So the Indiana Pacers lost by 20 at Madison Square Garden to go down 3-2 after game number 5. They won the next two games, including a game 7 at Madison Square Garden, shooting 67% like they did Sunday. I don't have any fear about this team responding. What would be great is if they got off to a 1-0 series lead and put the immense amount of pressure on Boston. I truly believe Boston can't afford to lose game one. They just can't. Because guess what's going to happen? Like we said before, their judging home crowd that is holding their feet to the fire saying, hey, here's your gift. The Western Conference has Minnesota and Dallas as the Western Conference representative. The six-seeded Indiana Pacers, this is Boston talk right now, the six-seeded Indiana Pacers is your matchup in the Eastern Conference Finals. If it's not now, then when? That is all that's being talked about in Boston. And quite frankly, that puts even more pressure on Boston, who again has been a great regular season team, but they have a lot of the same cast of characters that have fallen short time and time again. And it's why, honestly, they may be happy when they play games away from the Garden, from the Boston Garden. It's crazy. The Pacers just won in the Madison Square Garden. Now they go to the Boston Garden to try to get this all done. But I truly believe that is a factor in this series. It absolutely is. Because the Pacers are going to play a different style than Boston has seen at any point this postseason. And they're going to come at it in waves, and they're going to come at it and absolutely run like crazy. Can Boston keep up with that? I think it'll be very, very interesting. But one of the things that I said yesterday that I want to reiterate is this. I don't think the Indiana Pacers, we know that they're not a great defensive team, and the numbers will show you that, right? They're bottom 10 in the NBA in points allowed. That being said, there's a feeling about this team that they can defend better as a team than they can individually, because there is not one guy on this basketball team that is a great lockdown defender, and we saw it in the first two series, right? The one-on-one matchup with Damian Lillard, the Pacers just threw three guys at him just to give him different looks. And, yeah, at different points, they, just from sheer effort, putting a hand in the face, being in their airspace, just making things difficult, it wasn't exactly like, oh, yeah, hey, T.J. McConnell's that matchup. You know? Oh, hey, Aaron Nesmith's giving, hey, Damian Lillard all sorts of trouble. No, it was just a matter of sending to Adam and making him just work for more than he has to. Because we knew Milwaukee was relying on Damian Lillard. It was the same thing with Jalen Brunson, maybe even a level up, that Jalen Brunson is the heart and soul of that basketball team. And again, Aaron Nesmith had a little bit of success. But it's not like you were going to say, yeah, Aaron Nesmith is our answer to Jalen Brunson. No, there isn't an answer. And it's because the Pacers do not have great on-ball defenders. And that's okay. Okay? So what is going to win over in this type of series? It's the fact that there is not Boston's not going to play ISO basketball. They're going to play team basketball, which ultimately, in my opinion, is going to help the Pacers on the defensive end. Because they can't double Tatum, they can't double Brown, because that's just going to play right into the hands of the Boston Celtics. When you play one-on-one matchups and you play team defensive-wise, I think that lends itself to the strengths, if there is one from a defensive standpoint, for Indiana. It's kind of wild to think that way, right? That Boston's deeper. They have three, four, five different guys that can beat you from the perimeter. And yet, the Pacers probably match up better with them as a team than they do with trying to match up individually with one dominant player. You know? That is a weird sort of set of circumstances, and I may be proven wrong. I may be. But on paper, the Pacers really struggle with a one-on-one creating guard. But they do well kind of spacing it out and taking everybody else away. And you could see that in Game 7 when they defended as a team and they got stops as a team and got out to run. I mean, when they get stops defensively, it's ball game because of the way that they can run offensively. And this is, for Boston, maybe the most difficult matchup because it's the most versatile offense in the Eastern Conference, and it's going to – Indiana can play – they don't have the Tatums and the Browns at the very top. They don't have two guys like that. But the Pacers can go 1-7 and match up pretty well with Boston. Boston has that on everybody else in the Eastern Conference. And they may have that on everybody else in the league except for the Indiana Pacers. And, you know, Tyrese Halliburton's going to score 20, and that's great. That's awesome. But, you know, there's a lot of other teams that need 30 or more from their best player. The Pacers don't need that. They need Halliburton to drop 20, and they're good. If they get 15 from Turner, if they get 18 from Nembhard, if they get 12 from Nesmith, the Pacers are the only other team left in the Eastern Conference, heck, maybe in the entire NBA, that can stack up with Boston that way. So there's a lot of alignments here. Boston should win this series. I'm telling you. They should win this series. You know, we talked about who the better team is in the previous series. It was by far Indiana. I said that from Game 1. I said that after Game 5. And, of course, I said it after Game 7. We said it yesterday. This is a different ballgame. Boston is the better team. They should win this series. But you know what? There is no team in this NBA postseason that is more on their shoulders than the Boston Celtics. Because they've been in this run for 4 or 5 years, and they haven't won a championship. They've gotten to the NBA Finals only once. So there is an immense amount of pressure, and the pressure actually mounts even more with them being at home, not on the road. When they are at home, that is pressure because Boston fans are judgy. You know, they hold your feet to the fire. When you have something to prove, they kind of, yes, they cheer for you, but they kind of almost push you ahead and say, okay, I'm going to be here to support you, but I want you to prove it to me. And then when it doesn't happen, oh, do they unleash? They absolutely do. And that is the challenge playing in Boston. And there is no more team that feels that way than this particular team. And, you know, the mental toughness of Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown and this crew, maybe they're ready. Maybe this is their coming out party. But quite frankly, the Pacers have nothing to lose. Absolutely nothing to lose. And especially tonight. Because Boston can do whatever the heck they want tonight and win this game outright. It has no bearing on Game 2. As we've seen throughout the last couple of series, the Pacers have taken punches. They've taken knockout blows and come back the next game and won on other teams' home floor. I mean, it happens. And this team just has an identity of just forgetting what just happened. I mean, think all the way back to Game 1 in Milwaukee. What the heck happened there? Pacers were down 25 in the first half. Then they come back Game 2 win, and they win 2 at home. It's amazing. I mean, absolutely. They lost by 20 in Game 5 in New York. Honestly, that's grounds for a lot of teams losing Game 6 at home. Not only did the Pacers win by 20, they went back to Madison Square Garden in Game 7 and won by 20. So there is nothing the Pacers are going to see tonight, nothing they're going to experience tonight, and they're going to feel like they fold. Not even close. There's no folding for this team tonight. For Boston, that's a different story. What if the Pacers steal Game 1? What the heck's Boston going to do? What's Jason Tatum thinking? It is a mind game with the Boston Celtics, and that does play a factor in this series. So, advantages for Indiana. Let's talk about them now. We'll talk about them over the next week or so. Miles Turner's a matchup problem. He is. He has Al Horford. Al Horford's had a really nice career. Okay, and he is the 35 to 36-year-old version of what Miles Turner may be at some point in his career. But if you're telling me Al Horford's going to guard Miles Turner, that is an absolute gift for Indiana. Because Turner has found out, hey, he's got the length on Horford from deep, but also he's going to be able to drive by him. Miles Turner has actually improved as a ball handler, catching and ripping to the rim. You're meaning to tell me Al Horford's going to stay step for step with an athletic Miles Turner? That is a mismatch all series long, okay? The other mismatch, in my opinion, is Pascal Siakam, okay? I think that, I truly believe Boston is either going to put Derek White or Jaylen Brown on Tyrese Halliburton, just kind of run him around a little bit and make some things happen. But I got to tell you, Pascal Siakam is a key in this series because when he rolls, it's going to bring one of those other wings to an attention point from a defensive standpoint because it'll open up things for Tyrese Halliburton because, you know, Boston, if Siakam is an active scorer and he gets going early and you have to switch some defensive matchups, it's going to put a lesser defender on Halliburton and then he can attack offensively. So, you know, I think Siakam's going to be a key in any series, but we know that Tatum's not going to guard him. We know for the most part Brown's probably not going to guard him because it's going to take too much energy, too much physicality, and Boston needs those two to be great on the offensive end. It's the give or take there. Siakam's going to be a matchup problem. I truly believe Pascal Siakam has a couple of games in this series where he can be the best player on the floor. I do. I absolutely do. And we saw that in two games in Milwaukee, and it was a split in games 1 and 2 when Siakam went nuts. Siakam had a big game in game 7. Didn't really matter because there were 5 or 6 other guys that had big games as well for Indiana. But I'm telling you, from an ISO standpoint, from a matchup standpoint, Siakam can be a problem. And not only can he do it for himself, but open up everything for everybody else. But I love the Turner-Horford matchup. And then, you know, if you get Horford in foul trouble, who the heck's going to stay with Miles Turner? So Turner's got to be able to have a respectable series from deep, and then it's over because he catches rips to the rim as somebody tries to challenge him on the three-point arc. I mean, you saw as the series went later in Game 6 and 7, Turner started to really engage and get to the lane, and he's a problem. He's really figured that part out and been great. So I think those two matchups are key. you need an aggressive Tyrese Halliburton offensively, but I also believe you need a really efficient Pascal Siakam in games 1 and 2 in Boston. And I think you can get it. I think you can absolutely get it. So I have Boston winning this series because I think they should win this series. So if I'm going to be fair and say the Pacers were the better team in the Knicks series, I got to be fair here and not be the homer that we all think, you know, this team, the Pacers, we want them to win. Yeah, we do. But if I'm being real, Boston is the better team, the expected team to win this series. They should win this series. But I got to tell you, I think the Pacers match up fantastically against them. And it's going to be an absolute dogfight. And you know what? I think there's going to be a little bit of talking. And, you know, I'm cool with Tyrese Halliburton saying a couple things to Jason Tatum, Jaylen Brown. Let's go. Let's go. Game 1 tonight, 8 o'clock, fired up for it. We'll see how it all plays out. But I don't think, in conclusion, okay? In conclusion, I don't think it matters what anything happens tonight. Let me say that a little bit more eloquently. Nothing that happens tonight, win or lose for Indiana, if they win, it's a big deal. If they lose tonight, it does not matter if they lose by 5, if they lose by 20, if they lose by 30. Who the heck cares? Because as this playoff run has taught us, this team can bounce back from anything. So that is what I have on the docket tonight. We'll talk a little bit more about that later in the show today. Fired up for it. Pacers and Celtics. Gotta love it. Eastern Conference Finals, first time in 10 years that the Indiana Pacers have done just that, get to this point. So thanks to those of you joining us on Facebook Live. We'll have a full recap of this coming up tomorrow. Looking forward to breaking down what happens tonight. And I guarantee you we're going to have a lot to talk about. Yeah, we're going to have a lot to talk about coming up tomorrow. But when we come back, it is George Bremer. He's from the Herald Bulletin, and we'll talk about the Indiana Fever as well as the Indianapolis Colts. All of that when we return on the Power on a Tuesday. Talk amongst WMUN. Yes, welcome back inside the program, Power Talk of Muncie, WMUN, presented as always by Walls Furniture and Mattress, Nebo Road in Muncie online, wallsfurniture.com, 90% of what's on the showroom floor in stock for you, 48 hours or less. That's the Walls Furniture and Mattress difference on Nebo Road in Muncie online, wallsfurniture.com. As is typical, every single week we're joined by George Bremer from the Herald Bulletin as he joins us. And look, you know, as we mentioned a couple of weeks ago, on top of your Colts coverage, you're covering the Indiana Fever. What do you take from the first couple of weeks of the Caitlin Clark newly renovated Indiana Fever?
One thing is this league is really good. I mean, I don't know how many people realize, you know, how much talent there is in the WNBA. And those two teams that they've played, New York and Connecticut, and these home and homes, they were second and third last year in the league, and it doesn't look like they're going to drop much this year, if at all. You know, both of them are very physical teams, very talented teams. You see how good Breanna Stewart is for the Liberty. You see how good Alyssa Thomas is for the Sun. You know, I think the Fever have had a crash course in you know, what it's going to be like this year with the expectations that are on them and just the spotlight. You know, when Caitlin Clark's there, it's going to raise the level of play for their opponents. You know, you think about the college game is kind of what I compare it to. You know, whenever somebody's playing Duke in men's basketball, it doesn't matter what kind of year the Blue Devils are having. That history comes with them. And they're going to get everybody's best shot, whether they're undefeated, whether they're winless. No one's taking the Duke game off. And I think the Fever are in that boat right now because of the attention that surrounds Caitlin Clark. And you face two teams like New York and Connecticut who are thinking, hey, you know, that spotlight should be on us. They're going to do everything in their power to go out there and prove it in the game. And I think you saw the Fever get better in the rematches with both those teams. The second game in New York was much better than the home game with them 2 days earlier. And then obviously last night, you know, if not for a break here or there, they may have gotten their first win, a vast improvement over their opener in Connecticut. But now they hit the road, three games in the next 4 days on the West Coast. So even though you're not playing, the next two games are not quite at the same level as what they've seen so far, you know, your body clocks are changing. There's a whole new challenge ahead.
Yeah, I think it's interesting because I know locally a lot of our focus has been on the Indiana Pacers in a lot of ways. Have you seen, I mean, the numbers out of town are incredible, what, you know, the ticket sales and all those different things. But obviously, Gainbridge Fieldhouse, it's been very, very ruckus. But in some ways, the spotlight being shied away from her a little bit, has that helped? Or is this kind of what everybody expected, that it was going to be as energetic and as attention, as much attention that's been on her, if that makes any sense in that explanation?
Yeah, you know, I think last year they averaged something like 6,000 a game, and they put out over 17,000 for both home games so far. So, you know, the energy in the arena is really amazing. And last night in particular, when the Fever gave them something to cheer about, that was a great environment. You know, it was outstanding. You can see them feeding off of it throughout the game. They're a young team, and they've got to learn to win. They've got to learn to finish these games. I think that's part of it. But I do think the fact that you've got the Pacers playing outstanding basketball and playing in huge games, you've got the build-up to the Indianapolis 500, it does at least locally, you know, they're not necessarily leading the newscast every night. You know, they're not necessarily the first thing you talk about on your show. And I think that helps them right now. If they get into the heat of the summer and, you know, the NBA Finals come and go and IndyCar goes on to the next stop, they're going to be more and more a focal point. And I think, you know, they experience that on the road right now. I think it's, you know, kind of what you're talking about. Everywhere they go, it's like the Beatles right now. I think they're going to get even more of that at home, though, as the summer wears on.
Do you think it's fair? I try to get into this a little bit. And again, you know, I feel like when anything's new and shiny in any league, everybody that's in the league wants to kind of maybe step up their game a little bit against, and this being Caitlin Clark, that, you know, there's been a lot of vocal WNBA athletes about her. Do you think a little bit of the, I don't know if the jealousy or the comments are fair, or do you feel like there should be a little bit of this, hey, she's come in the league and she's instant revenue that's giving these teams, this league, a little bit more than it ever has had before?
I think Breanna Stewart had the best perspective on Saturday. You know, the Liberty became the first WNBA team to have a $2 million gate. And a lot of that was due to the fact that the Fever were there and Caitlin Clark was there, pushing it over, you know, that number. And she said after the game that, look, the attention that's on Caitlin is good for all of us. And so I think there are a lot of players who have that perspective. I think it's human nature. If you've been in the league for a while and you're a veteran like a Diana Taurasi, I think it's human nature to wonder how long you're going to see the benefits of this. I think the younger players are more open to it because they're looking at, hey, the media rights deal is up. If this fan, you know, increase continues, the money's going to start flowing in for everybody at levels it never has before. And I think the younger players probably get that a little bit more because they haven't had to go through it as long, first of all, you know, in the league the way it's been. But also they see a longer runway. They're going to get more of these benefits. I think some of the veterans, there's a sense of, hey, why didn't that happen for me? I accomplished more than she did with my team in college. Why didn't I get this attention? Why didn't I get this kind of, you know, revenue boost? And I think you'd see that in any sport. I think the only reason we don't see it as much in the NFL and the NBA is that those booms happened years ago. But I would imagine, I'm not quite old enough to really remember firsthand, but I would imagine Magic Johnson and Larry Bird went through some of the same things in the NBA because of the attention they were bringing to the league. But, you know, ultimately, look where the league goes as a result of that. So I think a lot of the players have the right perspective, but human nature is going to be that some of them, you know, there's jealousy, there's anger, there's frustration. That's always going to be part of the equation.
What has Caitlin Clark done best on the floor early on this season? Because it feels like from the outside, it's been a lot of up and down. What stands out when you've watched her as much as you have?
I think perseverance. I know that sounds kind of dumb, but she just hasn't really, aside from the technical last night, she hasn't really let the opposition get to her too much. And they're definitely trying. You know, they're trying to rattle the kid. It's an obvious game plan. It's something that anybody would do. You see it all the time in the NFL. There's a rookie quarterback. You blitz him, right? You try to put him under as much pressure. You see if maybe he'll panic in a certain situation. I think even when the shots haven't been falling or when she's turned the ball over too much at times, she's always ready to – she's able to put that aside and be ready for the next play. And that's not easy to do. You know, I think it's something that the really great athletes – that's one of the skills that they develop early on is that ability to say, okay, that last play didn't work out, but you saw it last night. She turns the ball over a couple times in a row. She gets a technical foul. Momentum swings heavily in favor of the Sun, and yet she's the one that drives to tie the game at 82. She's the one that gets the assist to Leah Boston to tie the game again at 84. So she's, I think that ability to stay in the moment and still make that next play, it's tough for rookies to do, and she's been able to do it really in all four games so far.
It's George Bremer from the Herald Bulletin covering the Fever, Caitlin Clark, and as well as the Indianapolis Colts. We'll get to the Colts coming up here in a second, but it's funny. After the first couple of games, this is going to sound strange, George, and you may agree or not, but after the Fever, and they're now 0-4, they started 0-2, and it's amazing. I looked on my social media, and there were fans that were calling for the Pacer or the Fever to review the job status of head coach Christy Sides. And you cover a sport in the Colts, in the NFL, that the cycle's short, and that's kind of the norm. Now, again, that's not what I'm bringing up here, but the fact that something like that was even brought up in a weird way, I feel like it's a good thing because it's taken to the level of how we see every other sport. Like, do you feel that way with some of the things that we've never really heard when we analyze the WNBA and specifically the Indiana Fever, that it's starting to almost level with what we talk about with the NFL and the Major League Baseball and the NBA in a lot of ways?
Absolutely. You know, I think that's, like you said, in a weird way, it's a sign of growth for the league. You know, so is the fact that everyone's mad about the officiating last night. Like, those are the kind of things that happen when, you know, the fan base gets invested, I guess, for lack of a better word. They're not all positive things,
sure,
obviously, but I think that's part of the process. Like, I'm sure if the Colts start 0-2, there will be similar sentiments about Shane Steichen. As good as he was last year, as much as he accomplished, you know, in the sports world, you know as well as anybody, what have you done for me lately, right? And so when they were 0-2, and especially the New York game, and the New York home game was abysmal. They'll admit that. They've said it several times already. That game was nowhere near the standard they need to be at. And I think people reacted to that, like you said, the way they would if the Pacers played that way, the way they would if the Colts played that way. It's a step forward for the league. There's no doubt about it. And so is, you know, last night, people being upset. Hey, this officiating crew, they need to be reprimanded. Those are the things that happen when the fans get invested, and you're seeing that investment. Now the Fever have to start stringing some wins together and you know, making that investment a little deeper.
Okay, this is the first time in 3.5, 4 years, and really with the, you know, the Indianapolis 500, the Fever, and then the Pacers edition, that really a weekly, daily topic has not been the Indianapolis Colts. And is there a connected element to the fact that it's a little silent from the daily talk of the Indianapolis Colts in May, knowing that obviously when we're in May, there's not a ton going on here, but does the attention on other entities from an Indiana sports standpoint actually aid the Indianapolis Colts in your mind in any fashion, George?
I think so, because I think they don't have the spotlight. They can just go do their work right now. You know, you can. They're basically in class at this moment. You know, they're learning whatever new wrinkles they want to put in. They're learning to play with Anthony Richardson still. They didn't have a ton of time with him, obviously, a year ago. Richardson's learning to play with Jonathan Taylor, and I think it's good for them to be able to do that without necessarily the day-to-day spotlight that comes on them normally this time of year. Pacers, I also think the Pacers, the energy the Pacers are bringing to the city, I think is really good for every team right now in Indy, because the fans are fired up. They're wanting to go. I think part of the reason that that crowd was as into the game last night for the Fever for an 0-3 team was, in general, fans are fired up right now, right? I mean, they're excited. They're ready to cheer for whatever opportunity they get. And I think that the Pacers' run is definitely resonating in the Colts building. I know that. The players are paying attention. A lot of them have been at games. And it's natural. You start thinking about, you know, if you're a Colt right now, what it could be like in January if you're able to make a playoff run of your own. It's just things like that, I think, feed off one another, if that makes sense. You see a lot in other cities. When one team gets good and makes a run, the other pro athletes in the city kind of feed off that energy and, you know, gives them kind of a higher bar to reach as well.
So for those, you know, because every year we kind of have to remind people of kind of the schedule right now, what are the Colts doing at this moment in time?
This is a big week. This week is the first time they're on the field. So I think today actually was the first time they went out and they practiced. Well, they were on the field last week, but they're not allowed to do 11-on-11. It's just individual work. So, you know, the quarterbacks are just dropping back and basically throwing on air or throwing to receivers who don't have defenders. You know, this week is more like training camp. It's not going to be as long of practices. They're not as intense, obviously. But you're going to see a defense for the first time. You know, defense is going to line up against the offense for the first time. So it's a big week for them. You know, I think you get out there, and especially the rookies, it's the first time that they go against an NFL veteran. They had rookie mini camp a couple weeks ago, but now they're out there and they're going to go against, you know, guys who have started in this league, guys who have won games in this league. Big step for them. And it's a good time for the team to just kind of lay the foundation for what they want to do in a couple months when training camp starts in Westfield.
And, you know, is this a good opportunity for, because, you know, and I imagine the rest of the team has seen him out and throwing, but is this when the momentum kind of builds for Anthony Richardson? Because we've heard the Colts are very excited about him and his growth and all the different things in rehab and everything along those lines. But is there something to the rest of the team kind of seeing it in the flesh, lack for better terms?
Oh, absolutely. You know, and then have him in there running the huddle and just to see his energy and see how much commitment he's put in. I mean, when he comes in and he knows the play right away and he's just spitting it out and he's not stumbling over any words or he's not looking over at Shane Steichen or Jim Bob Cooter and, you know, give that to me again, run it by me again. That it builds confidence in the offense. You're like, okay, you know, he's been spending this entire time off working. He knows this playbook inside and out. And from everything we've heard, that's the case right now. But I think when you see that in the classroom, it's one thing. You know, when he's able to answer the questions or when he's able to pick things up on tape, that's one thing that your teammates are going to react to. When he's in the huddle, it's just naturally going to be different, right? Or when he's at the line of scrimmage and he's strong with that cadence. It's little things like that, but it helps kind of put deposits in that bank that, you know, build up over the summer. And then when you finally get out there in September and you're facing the Houston Texans, you have that trust because it starts right now with things like that.
So is the count we're 7 weeks away from training camp? Is that right?
Sounds about right. I know right now, from my perspective, there's 3 more weeks of the off-season program. This week, okay. Next week, and then the veteran mini camp after that. Probably have 4 weeks off. By then, the spotlight will probably have turned back their way.
Yeah, is it like the week of the 22nd of July? Is that typically kind of the time period or the week of the 20th? Because usually that first preseason game is right at the very beginning of August, right?
It's going to be August 11th this year from what I've heard.
So they may not go back till the 29th then?
Somewhere in that range, probably 26, 27, 28, 29. Generally around there. I'm sure we'll start having that announcement pretty soon too. And it's going to be a big training camp because I think the fans are going to want to see, too, what does Richardson look like? Has he visibly improved from practice a year ago? Is he healthy? You know, all these things that, like you said, you really don't know until you see with your own eyes. I think the fans are going to go through the same process when training camp opens, and they can go and see him in the flesh. They'll have some of the same reactions the teammates are having now.
Yeah, it's wild. It's wild. There's so much going on. George Brimmer from the Herald Bulletin. Did I see you were at the track as well? Here recently?
I was.
Oh, my gosh.
I was there for qualifying on Sunday, so got to chase around Kyle Larson a little bit before he boarded a helicopter and flew to North Carolina.
I saw that. I saw that. On top of everything else you're doing, why not throw in the Indianapolis 500 as well, George?
Why not? Sunday should be a big day for that as well.
Yeah, it should be. Should be a great week. George has the coverage of the Fever, Indianapolis 500, and as always, the Colts for the Herald Bulletin, and joins us each and every week. George, we look forward to it next week. Have a great week, okay?
No problem, man. Anytime. Thanks a lot.
That's George Brimmer from the Herald Bulletin with us. We're going to step aside, come back, set you up for game one of the Eastern Conference Finals after this. Yes, welcome back inside the program. Power Talk of Muncie, the new WMUN, is always brought to you in part by State Farm agent Jason May. Make sure you get all the discounts you deserve by calling Jason at 747-7100 today. Great stuff from George Brimmer from the Herald Bulletin. I mean, what else could you want in the month of May when you have the Indianapolis 500, the Fever, the Colts going on, and of course the Indiana Pacers tonight? Game number one of the Eastern Conference Finals, tip off just shortly after 8 o'clock tonight. Pacers did beat the Boston Celtics a couple of times during the regular season, but Boston had themselves a great regular season. Over 60 wins this year. They by far ran away with the Eastern Conference. And you know, Cleveland didn't really give them much of a fight. The matchup in the first round as well, not much of a fight as well. This is going to be urgency time for Boston, but a lot of people look at this and say, man, the door is swung wide open for the Boston Celtics. And as I said at the top, we got to be fair to the situation. There is no question that Boston's the better team. Now, one of the things that is very interesting is the availability of Kristaps Porzingis. You know, he's kind of the third cog with Brown and Tatum. Porzingis has had a really good year, and he would be the matchup that probably would give Miles Turner the most difficulty because he's a little bit of like Miles Turner on the other side of the floor, a stretch four, a guy who can bring it to the rim, and a guy that can fill it up offensively. Turner's a better defender, but Porzingis looks like he's not going to be available for the beginning part of this series, which is an opportunity for Indiana. There's no question whatsoever with that. But I think even without him, Boston's still the better team. But I think there's no question the emphasis that is on the shoulders of Boston in this series. And we'll continue to talk about that. And I truly believe that no matter what happens tonight, that is all, there's just going to be an immense pressure on Boston. No question whatsoever about it. We're going to talk a lot more Indy 500 tomorrow, but clearly recap what happens tonight in Game 1 of the Eastern Conference Finals. We're going to have Rinus VK on the program tomorrow at 4:30, and lots to talk to him about. He had quite a weekend with the Fast 12 and a crash in his first qualifying session, etc. And he's starting in the top 10 of the 108th Indianapolis 500, and he's a veteran now. He's raced in this thing about 3, 4, 5 times. I mean, he's a guy that knows this track, and he's had quite the experience so far in the month of May. So look forward to having the conversation with him coming up tomorrow. So a big thank you to George Brimmer from the Herald Bulletin for joining us, all of you for stopping by. Here we go. Eastern Conference Finals, game number one tonight, Boston and Indiana, 8 o'clock the tip. We'll have the full recap tomorrow live at 4. Have a great evening. Enjoy the game. We'll talk to you tomorrow.